This is the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast with your hosts, Scott Walker and Jamie Davis, episode 206. I'm one of your hosts, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy and Sci-Fi Reads. I'm here with my co-host, urban and cozy fantasy author, Scott Walker. Scott, you've been working on Cozy Vale stuff and have a lot of exciting things happening. What has been going on? Because I just saw a thing. Is it the Boglands or...
Bog Bottom Vale.
Bog Bottom yes. Vale. I mean, I'm loving the reveals of the different veils in Cozy Vales and Bog Bottom Vale. I was just like, wow, there had to be a dark veil, and here it is.
Yeah, that was a fun one for me to write. We were Jamie's referring to our posting Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Facebook. We are at Cozy Vales on Facebook, and we've been doing a lot of kind of revealing of world building, different settings, different characters, different unique creatures and entities we've created just for Cozy Vales. And we get a lot of people who seem to be digging the world building reveals. And that particular one I created kind of in a, as you pointed out, a revelation that everything was like a little too cozy. And then, so I had that one. And then there's another one, the Shoals, which is just offshore. And I was like, we need pirates. We got to have some pirates somewhere, man. Got to have some pirates. So the Shoals is this archipelago that Queen Liana and her Royal Navy have never been able to bring under subjugation. And the pirates kind of operate out of it as a base. There are magic reasons why Queen Liana is not incompetent. But there are definitely some not so safe and not so cozy places in the Vales, and we will be exploring them at some point. Some author, I assure you, will have a story set in Bog Bottom Vale. Someone's mentioned wanting to do a pirate themed adventure. So yeah, it's probably happening at some point down the pike.
Yeah, I love the reference that like the Queen's guards will warn you when you go into Bog Bottom Vale that it's not a safe place, and don't expect them to come rescue you. So
right,
like it just opens up so many ideas.
They don't even bother with a waiver. They're just like, here's the deal, but you don't even have to sign a waiver. But here's what's gonna not happen actually when you call out for help. It was fun, and we have been doing a lot of work on Cozy Vales. In fact, the day we're recording this is the deadline for our short stories for our upcoming summer anthology. So, but by the time I wake up tomorrow morning, all of the short stories should be uploaded to our Google Drive. We will begin doing peer review for the next 2 weeks for continuity and canon reads, and we'll move on to the final editing phase. And we are looking forward to getting that book out in June. Before that, my alter ego pen name, L.A. Scott, who is the pen name I've chosen for Cozy Vales. We are busy writing in Tara's Guide to Cozy Vales, which is a lovely travelogue. So this feels like something that's right up your alley, because what I try to do is take all of the awesome world building in Cozy Vales and kind of thread it through a narrative with someone visiting the Vales and going through the Vales. And so you'll get to learn about the currency, you'll get to learn about the culture, you get to learn about the society, the politics, economics, all of that, in addition to having, I don't know, I think 12, maybe 10 or 12 different Vales will be showcased. And in Tara, the main character, will visit them. So that's going on. Short stories going on. I've got a brand new book coming out on April 18th in my Manhattan Magic Urban Fantasy series. So if you are a fan of Manhattan Magic, rest assured the third book comes out and drops Thursday the 18th. And then the next book will be out later this year. I'll get that pre-order up probably in the next couple of weeks. The cover design has been approved. I'm just waiting on the files. What have you been up to, my friend?
Oh, wow. Well, I finally have the first book in Uncle Chip Saves the Fae available for people to purchase. It's only available right now on my website. You can get it on a pre-order on Amazon and soon on the other stores as well. But you can get it over at jamiedavisbooks.com/shop and get Unlikely Guardian in ebook or audiobook now. Or you can actually get it on a discounted bundle if you want both together, because some people like to read along as they listen sometimes, and I want to make it available to folks the way they want it. But Chip is a jet-setting, proclaimed bachelor uncle who ends up being the unlikely guardian to two half-fae children, one of whom is destined to be the future Fae Queen. So he's got a lot of learning to do, and the children's Fae Aunt Rose really doesn't quite approve of Chip being named guardian of her niece and nephew. So
There's a little tension there.
Yeah, you've read it, so you know there's just a wee bit of tension there. Yeah.
I did. I read that, oh my gosh, a year ago. Yeah. I can't believe you. It's taking me this long. I mean, I know you had other things. You've been doing some really cool things, releasing it and Kickstarter and all that. But I'm so excited that it's finally going to be going wide and everybody can get their hands on it. It's awesome.
Yeah. So people can pick it up. I hope they will do so, and or go over. And I've already started seeing some pre-orders over on Amazon. So people are checking it out, and I'm excited about that. And I'm finally getting it out there for the wide public. Up till now, only about 130 people have read this book in the Kickstarter, and a few of my friends that like yourself. So it's, you know, it's out there now, so people can delve into it. I hope they enjoy it as much as the rest of the folks. Everybody that's read it so far has had great things to say about it. So I'm hopeful that will continue to be the case.
I'm sure it will be.
Awesome. Well, listen, let's go ahead and get into this week's episode. Our guest this week is Andy Pelequin, and I've known Andy for quite a long time. In fact, he was a guest on this podcast probably in the very first 6 months of the podcast, back in like the first 20 or 30 episodes, I think. So you can go back and check out an old interview with him there if you want. But we got to have Andy on the show, and Andy is first and foremost a storyteller and an artist. Words are his palette. Fantasy and science fiction are his genres of choice, and he loves to explore the darker side of human nature through the filter of heroes, villains, and everything in between. He's also a freelance writer, a book lover, and a guy who just loves to meet new people and spend hours talking about his fascination for the worlds he encounters in the pages of fantasy and sci-fi novels. Now, Andy says speculative fiction provides us with a way to escape, a way to forget about our mundane problems and step into worlds where anything is possible. It transcends age, gender, religion, race, or lifestyle. It is our way of believing what cannot be, delving into the unknowable and discovering hidden truths about ourselves and our world in a brand new way. Fiction at its very best.
Oh my, the bar has been raised. Let's get to it.
Andy, welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. I would love to give you a chance to introduce yourself to our readers and listeners out there.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. I am Andy Pelequin. Probably the most interesting thing about me is that I'm 6.5 feet tall. I mean, I write a lot of words. I write books. I've got a bunch of dark, epic fantasy, grimdark, military, big, big, chunky books, as you can see here. No one really wants to hear about me. They want to talk books. So let's do this.
Hey, we love a good chonky book. I mean, let's just be honest here. When you get into a book, and I mean, I write shorter books, but I also, you know, want people to go through them quickly and get to the next book fast. Yeah. But I'd love a big chonky book when I'm sitting down to read and just delving into a world. So I get it.
I've been reading, like, right now, during the summer, it's all indie reads. And then during sort of the rest of the year, I do a lot of like traditionally published reads. So I've been reading, like, I just finished A Court of Thorns and Roses, which is, you know, your average fantasy length. And it's only about 400 pages, yeah, which is nothing. Like, that's like a 4 or 5 hour read for me.
Wow.
Whereas something, you know, like a lot of us indies, we go hard on the words, you know, Ryan Cahill, his 300,000-400,000 words, mine are, you know, 250. That's when you're really sitting there for 10 hours or something. But like, or when I read sci-fi, I just finished Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. And that was just like a short, easy read because it's only about 100,000 words. Like, they're short books for me now.
Dude, I don't read near that fast. Kudos to you that you can get through the books that quickly.
I've been a speed reader most of my life. I think it's contributed also to my being a speed writer. So when I sit down, like, it takes me a minute to kind of build up a head of steam, as they say. But then once I'm kind of immersed in the world, the world building's all done in the first, we'll call it 25%. By the time that's done and I know who my characters are, I know, the magic system, the antagonist, all of that, it's just like full speed ahead.
Well, let's talk about writing. What prompted you to jump into writing? Because it sounds like you're a creative guy. You've got a lot of creative avenues you could have pursued, but you've written like dozens and dozens of books to date across, I believe, sci-fi and fantasy. Like, how did that all start?
So I had a teacher, in elementary school who was just a fanatic for the arts and sciences. And it goes without saying that I'm a terrible artist. So writing was kind of my only creative outlet. And I kind of, dabbled here and there over the course of my teenage years, as teenagers are wont to do, tons of free time. But this was like the days of dial-up. So there was no real internet access. So it was like Microsoft Word or Microsoft Paint was what my computer had. So, there was only one choice for me. But really what prompted it was that I was reading this series that I loved. I fell in love with Night Angel by Brent Weeks, this super badass assassin character. I bounced through, like John Flanagan's Ranger's Apprentice. There was a little bit of action to that. And then Robin Hobb's Assassin's Apprentice. I was like, oh, assassins. And then there was no real assassinations. So I was like, gah. And then I found Night Angel and I was like, oh my God, where have you been all my life? I loved it. And then it ended. Three books. That's all they gave me. There were no more. So I was like, well, shit, I'm going to write my own. And that is literally my origin story. The character of the hunter was conceived because I loved, with fantasy, a lot of it is young adults coming into their powers, like especially, kind of the classic fantasy. You've got everything from Aragorn to Rangers, Assassin's Apprentice, Ranger's Apprentice. Everything is all about, Wheel of Time. It's all about these young people finding their thing. I didn't want that. I wanted dude at the peak of his abilities. You don't need no training. It's all about let's go and just kick some ass. And that was what, that's what started it. And then eventually it became this super fascinating exploration of the psyche, the psychology of a killer, of an assassin. What would make someone do this for a living? And that became the more interesting thing to me. To this day, it is still the most interesting part. Like the ass kicking and body dropping is just a vehicle to explore all of the emotional turmoil that I can put this guy through. That's really what it has become about for me.
I think the quote of the day will be, shit, I can do that.
I won't claim to do it as well, but I was like, I have to take a crack at it. And I will say it's been a decade, just over a decade since I released my first book, which no longer exists. Thankfully, it wasn't a great book, so you can't find it anywhere. But I started writing the series that eventually became Darkblade in 2014. And it's what led me here to this day. It has sold 250,000 copies, 200,000 copies, I think, across just ebook and paperback, not counting audio. So it's, people love a badass assassin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it, and I don't want to say that it's a copy or one's a copy of the other, but it gave me, John Wick vibe when I read it. That whole idea of this like assassin who gets done wrong and goes and turns against the people that were working with him. Right. I love, and then the deep fantasy world building that you put together there. What is it about world building in that type of a setting that is so important that drives the character?
I think the best world building is only what's necessary to the character and the story. Like, everybody, if you ask them what they don't like about Lord of the Rings, pretty much everyone will have one complaint, is his description of trees, right? Like everyone will talk about that one time that he overdoes trees. No, there is no other complaints about Lord of the Rings except for that. And that's a pretty good example of world building done to an excess. You didn't need all of that trees. You need a little bit of trees. The rest of it was just kind of his desire to be poetic. And hey, that's his, artistic license. But that's kind of my thing. I'm like, all right, what is important to the story right now? How much does the character actually need to see in order to be grounded in his surroundings and then discover the rest as he goes? And it's a little bit like one thing I do when I go to a new city. I love to do this. I will take an Uber somewhere in the middle, like first thing in the morning, I will, you know, have breakfast at some random place that I, you know, pick off the internet. And then I will walk from wherever that is to sort of, you know, 5-6 miles to the nearest Starbucks and write a chapter. And then I'll go somewhere else and I'll write another chapter. I've done this in Denver, New York, Miami, every big city that I go to. This is like my ritual. And I love exploring and discovering a new city like this. And that's kind of how the writing happens for me. It's like, okay, I'm here right now. This, I see all this stuff around me. Ooh, this is really cool. This is really interesting. Now we're going to go somewhere else. And there's a whole new thing to discover. But it's not about, you know, everything at once, because you can never see everything at once in and you know anywhere you go. So it's just like those bits and pieces become super interesting, and they're only relevant in the moment to the character.
Yeah, I get that. I totally get that. I think a lot of authors have been have fallen into the trap of over world building and overbuilding everything. Me included, for sure. It's one reason why I struggled with fantasy for so many years. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to scrap the world building, jump to urban fantasy. And all of a sudden I was able to crank out a novel, and it wasn't awful. And you know, that led to my first series. I want to go back to a comment you mentioned a little bit ago about the action and the kickassery kind of being an excuse to unpack kind of the emotional side of the characters. When I looked at the reviews for Assassin, which is book one in the Dark Blade series, a lot of the readers keyed on that. I mean, they mentioned that over and over again. Like, this is a great anti-hero with a great background, great story. Loved the unfolding of his background and the revealing of his secrets. And like, you're going to weep. You're going to be in anguish at the end. You're going to be grateful for that journey that Andy takes you on. So clearly you've hit something with that. Would you say that that is maybe your most favorite part of writing, is being able to kind of peel back the layers of a character chapter by chapter and make that the core of a story journey?
Absolutely. So I started writing in 2013. And right that same year, I got diagnosed with Asperger's on the ASD spectrum. So I was like, what's going on? Why is my brain so different than other people's? What is different about me? And that's what led to the writing of this Different, Not Damaged short story collection, because I was like, okay, I need to understand myself. And so I had started writing this story, and the early feedback from beta readers was like, look, this character is a badass, but it's all surface level. What's going on? And so I was like, okay, that makes perfect sense. And it just kind of happened at exactly the right moment that I was going through this in my own personal life. So I was like, okay, let's do a deep dive into this. And at the time, I found this paper the Secret Service published. They had done a bunch of interviews with hitmen and assassins, I think 70 or so over the last 40 years or something. And these are not, you know, necessarily people who do like the fantasies, but like the kind of assassins who targeted, you know, Martin Luther King or Robert F. Kennedy, like the real kind of assassin. And then also, you know, hitmen, guns for hire. And they basically did a psychological breakdown where there's four types of assassins and 8 different motivations for people to kill. I cannot quote them all offhand because it's been a few years since I've read it, but it was like, oh my God, this is concrete information that I can use. So basically, I looked at this list and I was like, okay, there needs to be at least one good reason for him to be an assassin. And then there needs to be another reason that's maybe the real reason. So obviously, money is the reason that people get into this. So that's the easy one, right? But then further down the list, there was like, they have mental disorders. And I was like, whoa. And I was watching Criminal Minds at the time. And this one episode came on. It was the villain of the week. Every week it's a different villain. They're all one-off characters. And this one was the only Asian American killer, right? Murderer. And it just so happened that the voice of his father was in his head. It was some, you know, auditory hallucinations or something. The voice of his father, he would kill to shut up that voice. And then he would have to kill over and over and over again. And so you see him kind of devolving into madness, and you see him talking to his father and angry. And it was just like a bolt of lightning, some random, you know, one-off TV episode. And I was like, this is it. And I knew that I wanted to have this magical dagger, and I didn't know what the magical dagger relevance was. And then all of a sudden, the voice of his father, what if the soul of a demon ancestor is turned into this gemstone in his magical dagger, giving him power? And it was just like everything, a bolt of lightning out of a clear blue sky. Everything just fell into place so perfectly. And it started on that journey of this character. But before I knew it, it was like, it was a reflection of my own journey as a very young man taking on the responsibility of a stepfather. So in the first book, the character, he has protected this young girl since he found her. Her parents were dead, found her lying in the snow as a child. Wouldn't normally have done done anything about it, but something happened that night in his backstory. It's a short story that I give away for my newsletter subscribers, that made him pick her up and take her to the temple to be cared for by the, you know, these priests. And he visits her in secret all the time. And he's like, he doesn't necessarily show her who he is. He's just trying to kind of be a part of her life, even though he doesn't know how. And at the time, you know, I got together with the woman who is now my wife. I was 21 years old, and her children were between the ages of 4 and 9. You know, like, I was a very, very young man, no idea what I was doing. And so this was just kind of like something that came out as I was writing. And then in the second book at the time, the character, he's lost everything, he's traveling, and he basically saves this young boy and ends up traveling with him. Terrible stepfather, the worst stepfather in the world, essentially, to this kid. And I was like, well, let's just, and it basically ended up being my experiences done through a fantasy story. And so, and then, you know, I finished that series, and then coming back to it in 2020, knowing that I wanted to do more, it was like, okay, the journey that I'm going through right now, or at the time it was, you know, my children were becoming young adults and moving out, and now they're all moved out. And it's like, what role do I serve in their lives? And so all of this stuff, it's just shaped this guy's journey. And yeah, sure, there's tons of ass kicking, you know, assassinations, sieges, and all, you know, fantasy conceits that make it interesting. But at the core of it is just this stuff that's so germane to who I am as a person, that I'm just like, I'm experiencing my own life's journey in a way through his eyes. And it's such an interesting exploration. And I think it makes it so engaging for me as a writer, which is why it's going to be 15 books and, I don't know, 4 or 5 million words when all is said and done. And people are along for the ride because they're like, oh, wait, this is his story. And I think it's what's kept this series as my bestseller and the one that people connect with the most.
Well, you mentioned different, not damaged, and I want to touch base on that because you and I are both part of the Action Fantasy Book Club this year, and I'm so excited to be invited to be part of that group. It's 12 authors, one different author featured every month. You're featured in the month of April with this collection of short stories, of fantasy short stories, different, not damaged. 6 stories with one impactful message, and you touched on that briefly, but I think it's so important that you know, we get to talk a little bit about how this relates back to all the things you were just talking about.
Yeah, so again, I put the short story collection together starting in, I think, 2014, 2015. I was kind of researching like titles for my earlier novels. And, you know, there's those title generators that just come up with something. And one of the titles suggested was Paint a Black Picture. And I had this image in my head of, I paint a black picture because there is no one else to do it. And I was like, what does this mean? Like, it meant nothing, but it stuck in my head. And it kind of just like ruminated until it came up with this idea of this kid who could paint, but he only painted in black. But because of some neurological disorder, which turns out to be sensory processing disorder, which happens to often go hand in hand with autism spectrum disorder, like these two are often very hand in hand. So some people, you know, they're very sensitive to sound or textures or tastes or smells or things like that, or bright lights. it was just like, I was researching autism at the time, and it was just, it was so fascinating that this sensory processing disorder came up at the same time that I got this idea. And so the story became that this character, he paints these pictures. No one else can see them except him. But every time he does it, they're a picture of someone dying. And so it was just like, okay. And I had to tell that story more and more. And it became sort of this, this young autistic boy's, he's nonverbal, and yet he sees someone dying and he has to try to stop it, even though he's spent his life locked away in the dark room where there's no light, there's no sound, there's no one touching him, there's no text, there's nothing. He's like, he has to break out of his sort of self-imposed safety to go and see this person and maybe try to save them. And that was just like, it was just this fascinating concept. Like, what would drive a person like this with these limitations to do that? And then and that led to another story. I was talking with a friend of mine who had been recently diagnosed with fibromyalgia at the time. And I was like, what is this? And she was telling me about it's this unexplained pain that they don't know where it's from. And it triggered this idea of this, this priestess who was able to absorb the pain of people, and it manifests as fibromyalgia. And then, it, you know, I was always very interested in the military stuff, and PTSD came up. And so I wrote a story, and I never read fantasy books that actually dealt with PTSD like head on. It was always, you know, you see it like in Joe Abercrombie, he kind of touches on it lightly, where one of the former soldier characters, he gets a little bit of the shake. So, you know, people, they end up getting drunk because they can't handle it. But it's not like there's actual concrete addressing the issue. It's kind of skirted around. So I was like, well, let's do this. Let's go full on into PTSD and kind of discover how someone with PTSD could kind of find a way past it. And so this guy is triggered. Like, he avoids an entire section of town because there was the sound of, you know, hammers, like blacksmith's hammers, and it reminds him of battle. And so how do you get past that? How do you deal with that in a fantasy setting with no therapists, with no, you know, modern therapies? And so it was such an interesting exploration, all of these stories. So this was kind of the journey that this collection took me on. And it's been something that I've tried to do ever since. Like, my goal with Different Not Damaged was to take these disorders and show how they're not just a limitation, which they absolutely can be, but they're also the superpower. So having these two things coexist hand in hand, because of these characters' very specific disorders or disabilities, they achieve something that no one else could. And that was what I wanted to show. And it's what I've continued to show in every single story that I've written to this day. Like, the Cerberus series is basically a sniper who takes a grenade to the spine, and he ends up in this AI-powered super suit, kind of Tony Stark, Iron Man style thing. But because of that, he is in a specific place to, you know, do all these things that ultimately leads to him, you know, saving the day, whatever. But because of his disability, he is empowered to do things that the badass people who are fully abled, they can't do it.
Love it. I love it. So I'm enjoying hearing you talk about the inspiration you've got for your stories, because they're intriguing, compelling. It feels like you're drawing a lot of those same fantasy tropes we see in a lot of books, but you've got your own unique take on it. Would you say there's an Andy brand of book out there? Is there something that readers come away with after reading your books, whichever books they happen to be? Is there an experience you either aim for or that your readers tend to have in common after they read one of your books?
So my goal with every story that I tell, I'm going to make it dark, right? Like, that's my thing, is going to be, I am going to push the characters and you, the reader, through them to the limits of your emotional and physical capacities, right? Because reading like the Icewind Dale series or Logan Nine Fingers, right? This guy, he goes through hell and back every time, but he walks away with, you know, a few fingers less or a couple of pints of blood less, but he walks away, right? So I'm like, I'm going to take you to the limits of your thing. There's always going to be darkness. There's always going to be sorrow, loss, pain, grief. It's always going to be deep, dark emotions, but there's always going to be a light at the end of the tunnel that will make you walk away from it feeling hopeful and satisfied. And I want to say better connected to someone else and a better understanding of yourself. Like, that's kind of my brand, is to give you the most genuine and raw human experience that I can, wrapped up in a whole heck of a lot of action. Like, you will have fun and you will feel.
I think that's a great way to describe your books, Andy. It's like, you will have fun and you will feel. I think that's a great brand statement right there. And it's so on point. One quick question before we get to the last section of our show. And that is, when you're writing, do you consider yourself a discovery writer? I mean, do you have everything kind of seen in the back in your mind as you get started writing, or are you learning alongside the reader, sort of?
I would say I'm about 75-25. Before I sit down to write, I need to know where I'm going, because I want to figure out the best way to get there. So I will have an outline for every book, every big story arc, often every chapter, just because it avoids the "what am I going to write today" syndrome. You know, I've never had to worry about writer's block because I know what's coming. Now, there is, you know, writer's anxiety, there is writer's self-doubt, there's all the other things, but the block is not something I have to worry about. But despite having an outline, I kind of feel in the moment what I'm writing, and I'll often discover things about the characters or about the moments or about, you know, a thing that I have plotted previously that just doesn't work or could be done better. And I'm like, okay, let's shift to that. Like, so I've actually written 47 novels under my name. I've published 45. So I have learned to sort of trust my instincts as a writer. I'm like, okay, I don't necessarily understand why my brain is telling me to do this, but my fingers typed out this, that the character said something I didn't expect, or they made a decision that I didn't expect. Let's play it out and see what happens. So there is a great deal of discovery that happens in the creative process. I've learned to plan and then plan to break the plan, essentially.
Makes sense. Makes sense. I'm a plotter. Having learned the hard way that pantsing does not generate good product for me.
You have to be a spectacular storyteller. Now, this is the difference between like an author, writer, and storyteller. Storytellers, they have this innate, instinctive creativity that is, I envy them, right? Because they can come up with amazing things and figure out how to tie it all together. But this is unfortunately where you see a lot of books fall flat at the ending. Like, you can go along on this spectacular journey, and because the ending is only good when the rest of the book was great, it feels like a letdown. And this is often the result of storytelling, or, you know, of discovery writing. Now, the opposite risk is that it feels sort of planned, you know, this natural progression that feels kind of, you know, there's no real ebb and flow to it. It's just kind of a straight progression. It can get not boring, but samey. So it's all about finding sort of the way to combine both of those two, to just have a plan, but then get ready to throw some curveballs at yourself and look for those curveballs. Because if you find it interesting in the moment or unexpected in the moment, your readers will too.
Yeah. And I think I'm 75-25 in the other direction. And one of the things that I learned early was that it took me 3 or 4 books to figure out how to end a book. You know,
it's
not easy. And those early endings aren't great either. So, I mean, but what I discovered was, if I could have the hint, if I could have the idea for a story idea and know what the ending scene looked like in my mind, then I knew I could get there. And that's the difference for me. I mean, I plan out the beginning of the book, and I know what the ending's going to look like. And then I don't have very much idea at all how they're going to get there in the middle. And for me, it's scary. And I can understand. I mean, there are days where I just have no idea what's going to happen. And it's hard to start writing when that is in that situation. But I appreciate everything you just said, because it is so true. It is hard to end a book with a satisfying ending for the reader. And I've had to learn to trust my instincts, like you said, is, you know, if the ending is satisfying for me, I have to trust that it's going to be satisfying for the reader. And the joy of the discovery writing for me is if it surprises me, it's going to surprise the reader because I didn't know it was coming. They aren't going to see it coming either. So, yeah. But yeah, that's great. Well, we are nearing the end of the show and we want to give you a chance to get on with your evening. So let's hit the next section. This is the final section of the thing. We call it the No Wrong Answers portion of the podcast, Andy. And ooh, it
challenge
is
challenge accepted.
All right. So
gonna get a couple of answers wrong here.
Okay. Well, you can't, but that's okay. It's going to be five rapid fire questions. They'll be yes or no, or a real quick short answer. No wrong answers. Just the first thing that comes into your mind. And we'll let Scott kick it off.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones?
Lord of the Rings. Easy.
Yeah, there you go. French fries or mashed potatoes?
French fries.
Nice. Favorite vacation spot?
So far, Mexico, but I loved Argentina.
Awesome. Breakfast for dinner, yes or no?
Sure. Why not? Live a little.
Exactly. All right. Last question. The movie you quote the most is?
Ooh, whew, that's a tough one. See, in my head, it's Princess Bride. Like I said, As You Wish to my wife, like for 2 years and tried to show her that movie all that time. So she would know just how romantic I was being, but she fell asleep every time. So she doesn't know how powerful As You Wish is. And Inconceivable is still in my head. And that fight scene with, Wesley and Inigo Montoya on the, yep, on the cliffs, like that is still the pinnacle of badassery to me. You get the humor, you get the awesome action, you get the tension, like that is magic.
Well done, well done. And no wrong answers, literally no wrong answers. You nailed it. I knew you would.
Thank you.
Hey, do you have anything you want to share with readers? Do you have an upcoming book that's launching? Anything in particular you want to promote?
I mean, I am working on Darkblade 9 of 15. So I will probably be working on that one for the next couple of years. I am beginning work on a secret side project that will be announced sometime in the next few months. It's not something that I control. So I am going to let those who control it announce it at their own pace. But I'm just the kind of writer that sits down like Jamie does his rise and grind thing every day. I'm more of a sit quietly in my office and grind.
There you go. Well, I know we can find out more about you if people head over when they get this and check out actionfantasybookclub.com. You're the book of the month in April. So if they sign up for the newsletter there, they'll get sent the information on how to get Different, Not Damaged. And let's see what else. And andypeliquin.com. Yes.
AndyPeliquin.com. I have signed books available for sale on my website. I'm on Instagram and TikTok as Andy Peliquin Author, where I basically rave about books and occasionally mention my own. That's all you need to know about me. That's all there is to me.
Awesome. Thanks for coming.
It has been great
chatting
with you. Yeah, it's been
fun.
Thank
you for having me.
Have a great night. Thanks so much.
I had such a good time having Andy on the show. I mean, and he is such an easy guest to interview too.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned at the top of the episode, like the bar's been raised. He easily cleared that bar. We could have talked for, I'm sure, hours, like, you know, a couple of beers at a table in the corner at some tavern. We could spend all evening talking about stories. So I'm looking forward to having him back on the podcast.
Definitely. And I want everybody to know you can find out more about Andy's links to his website and everything we talked about in the show notes for this episode. That's available over at jamiedavisbooks.com. There's a link to the podcast in the drop-down menu at the top of the page or over in the sidebar. So I hope folks will check it out and follow up on those links to Andy's books and everything we chatted about during the show. Scott, let's share with listeners how they can get in touch with you and follow what you're up to.
Absolutely. It is scottiswriting.com and Scott is writing on all the major social media sites. And you, sir?
Well, you can get my latest book, Unlikely Guardian. It's available direct from my website. Visit jamiedavisbooks.com/shop and look for the first Uncle Chip Saves the Fae novel, Unlikely Guardian. Until next time, I'm Jamie Davis.
And I'm Scott Walker, and we're asking you to keep on reading and keep on listening right here to the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast.